Preston, just sign in.
Oh, all right.
Okay, I'd like to open the meeting with the legislators, the legislation committee for Monday, July 12th. 1:10, it's 1:10 p.m. And we're joined by legislators Burton, Myers, Frieda Williams, and John Tessie. So we have a few appointments to deal with and one waiver. Do I have a motion to approve the appointment?
John, do you want me to report on this?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The subcommittee on appointments has reviewed the following individuals and recommends them highly and without any reservation whatsoever. First is the appointment of Giulio Cavallo to the Police Advisory Board. So moved.
Second.
Second.
That's right. Legislator Harkin is also on the legislation committee. I didn't mention it. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None.
Secondly, the appointment of the Commissioner of Human Resources, Carrie Oristano, who had previously been brought before this committee and to the floor but was recommitted. We're now bringing out again, and we so move.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
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 Joined by Legislator Burroughs.
Hello, hello.
You want this one, legislation, right?
Are
you
yes. Up? Thank you, John.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, next.
That's it.
No,
no, we have.
These are communications, sure. Are they not?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Resolution. James Chisholm of for the Parks Recreation Board. So moved.
You got a second?
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye. Houston.
None. And then the doctor, Dr. von Schoen. Houston. Do you want to say something about Klaus von Schoen?
I love your pronunciation.
To the Community Services Board, Mr. Chairman. So moved.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. And then we have one waiver.
Which we have not considered.
Okay. So this is a proposal.
Well, maybe we should, but we did not.
No,
this doesn't go before appointments, I don't think. But who can report to us on, you know,
what this? I can get you Olivia if you want.
Yes. Why don't we have Olivia?
I don't know. It doesn't seem to me that it really
which
suits
one?
Going to the subcommittee appointments unless
which one is that?
The resolution. It's the waiver
for Bowles.
For Bowles to help out.
I mean, we'd certainly consider it if you want to assign it to us.
No, I don't
see any.
I think this is right. Put on because it needs action.
Just keep it here and just knock it out. John, do you agree? We don't need to see these waivers of the committee on appointments.
No, I don't think so.
And then we'll go right into the flash.
Okay.
We'll invite whoever's here to come and see.
Well, I think most of them aren't going to be here till 1:30.
Okay.
That was the time we had it on the agenda.
Right.
For
right.
Starting too early?
Isn't that a funny problem?
Could you do the minutes?
Yeah, sure.
We'll do the minutes next, as soon as. Olivia, could you take a seat, please, and just take us through this waiver for Bob? Hi, how are you doing? What's the deal with Bob now? What is he going to be doing? You know.
He'll be working with looking at the hospital and the ongoing issues that we've had with them. Looking at the corrections healthcare contract. There were some capital things that he was working on, the Children's Museum, and that's one that I can think of off the top of my head. And just generally, with all these people that are leaving on the county side,
right,
administratively, just all the institutional knowledge that he has that would help us, especially given the impending budget deficits that we're anticipating for 2011. He's also going to be working on 6J and 6M insurance and workers' compensation.
Okay, any questions?
What's the compensation? What are we paying?
The not to exceed amount would be $50,000 for a 12-month period.
Do we have any idea, limited to the areas that you said you think we might need his expertise, what the county might spend?
No. I mean, we would really have a better idea once we get the budget to know what some of those difficulties would be. So that's a limit.
And how does this get structured? Is it on an hourly basis? Is it on a per diem?
Right now, it would be equal monthly payments. We were anticipating equal monthly payments, but
we're talking about $50,000, say it equals.
So
$50,000 divided by 12.
Yes, that was.
I would suggest that maybe the county might be better off doing it on an hourly basis, as opposed to doing it on a monthly basis, particularly since we're talking about a budget process that begins in November and ends in December. That's his expertise. So,
expertise in insurance that he did prior to coming.
Since we're already into the seventh month of the year, are we talking about $6,000 per month from now until the end of December?
No, it's through, it's a 12-month period from July of this year through July of 2011.
But you're still talking $4,000 plus a month.
Legislator salary. I'm wondering if we anticipate having more waivers coming either from this board or from the administration, and if perhaps we ought to set a standard approach for what we're going to do here. Because if we are, and I can't believe, frankly, that the administration is not, in fact, devastated by a number. We know that the Department of Social Services, for example, has had massive retirements, and I gather Parks has also had situations like this. Would it perhaps not be the world's worst idea that we step back a little bit and establish a framework for the information we want and the duties that are going to be assigned, where the individual is going to work, who the individual is going to report to, and things like that, rather than ad hocing it? Because I can see it developing into something that perhaps would be a little bit unpleasant from person to person, and unnecessarily so.
I would agree.
I would suggest that, Mr. Chairman.
Which is what I'm getting at, and if we do it on an hourly basis and we restrict it, county was thinking initially to do this on a monthly basis, I'd say, well, we limit it, the hours. I mean, at $40-something hundred a month, if it's a $50,000, divide that by 12, that's 4,000 and change. That's a lot of hours. For somebody, how much is a consultant being paid? So we got to break those hours down. I think it should be paid on an hourly, with not to exceed on a monthly basis, with weekly timesheets being submitted. If somebody,
yeah, I think that's something that we probably ought to have an offline workup on, so that we know. Because I would think, for example, I mean, not to name names unnecessarily, but Mr. Mann. Mr. Mann from Social Services has taken the option, and I believe is being considered for being brought back under these circumstances, of pay level at that level versus someone else, let's just make something up, in the Parks Department, would be vastly different. One would be seasonal, one would not, and so on. So I think we really need some sort of a subcommittee or a task force to work up some conditions on this, so that we have we just don't get into this on a person-by-person basis.
And following up, since we also sat on the committee that investigated Mr. Chris,
reviewed the process of...
Right,
of things.
I think,
yes.
I think what we should do is make sure that the chairman or somebody reviews these bills on a weekly basis.
I think our fiscal staff has always been...
Mr. Chair, we asked you to come in because some questions arose as to Mr. Bolton, the waiver for Mr. Bolton, and the terms under which he's being retained as a consultant. So, and the concern is, why do it on the basis of a set salary as opposed to an hourly rate and pay him on the number of hours he puts in?
Well, there's certainly an option that we can certainly exercise, but it's the amount of time that we expect for him to be utilized. And for the amount of time and the expense overall, we expect that we're going to get much more than that particular hour's worth. But certainly, we had to put in an hourly rate as it was.
We weren't sure of that. My position was that if we're talking $50,000 for Mr. Bolin over a year's time, I think his expertise is going to be needed mostly during the budget, although, albeit, I heard that there might be insurance issues and other questions that we can keep in mind. But if we limit his monthly fee to a certain or hourly fee to a something, where he's also limited on a monthly basis to what he can charge the county. He's executing this contract. He knows what terms he's agreeing to. This way we're ensured that the county is not going to be any further liability. And secondly, I think we should put, and Mr. Chairman, you sat on the committee also with Mr. Chris, we should make sure that somebody reviews these bills on a weekly basis, whether it falls on you as the chairman or somebody else. I think that would be the proper review.
From the, well, the department that utilized it would be the one that would have the initial sign off on it, and then I would count, I would sign as a countersign to it. They would say that this is a particular person's hours and the things that they're working on and the activities that they're working on. Right at this particular point in time, as you know, the budget court process started on June 15th. So the expertise is not needed when we get down to November. It really started right now.
True.
So that really is the analysis that's important, and we expect in this current economic environment that we are going to utilize Mr. Boland's full skill set and the institutional knowledge that he has between the medical center, stuff that we have going on, and the request that they have for us to try to support some additional modifications in their cooperation agreement. We also know that we have this significant issue with the healthcare contributions that we all understand that the RFP is being shaped as we speak at this moment in time. In addition to all of the things that we have going on in the individual departments, one of the things that would be helpful for us, especially at this point in time, I know with Mr. Robinson from the law department, and some of the modifications that are in front of us right now as far as ANC is concerned, Mr. Boland has the institutional knowledge, as does Mr. Robinson, that none of us on the board have, because none of us were around when those modifications were made into ANC to let some of the exceptions have to take place. And quite frankly, we thought it was better for us to have a flat rate instead of doing the hourly rate scenario, just because of the amount of time that we expected for him to utilize through this process. But certainly, you know, we can go either way. It doesn't feel bad. But having that level of expertise is, I believe, essential in this particular period of time. We will have, from our staffing perspective, the horses that we need to do to go through every nook and cranny. You know, at this particular moment in the county's budget, we still have not closed out 2009. At this moment, we're getting ready to go into August. That was due on March 31st. Where we were supposed to have that information to us, and you know, because of various things that have happened, we still don't have that information. That's budget and finance's responsibility. The monthly sales tax numbers, both Olivia and Bob have been working through that, trying to get the numbers straight. And again, the institutional knowledge for us to execute and move forward, saving the significant dollars that we're saving in our department overall, is just worth the value. There's no question about it. Mr. Boland is public record, so we're not telling secrets. Mr. Boland was making $150,000 as the budget chair, the budget fiscal director. Our new fiscal director is not making that particular salary. And overall, we will save from our budget, our department, we will save, even with this particular outlay, we'll have saved at least $100,000 as far as what we're trying to do. So I think that it's just a good, you know, value for us to do and to make sure we have the expertise necessary to make the decisions that we have to make.
You're saying that between the new budget chair, what Bob was getting, plus this consultation, we're saving $100,000?
In that department. Between the modifications that we've made in the department altogether, because
okay.
we have other
we
things
lost
that we've
two employees.
Okay, I didn't even add that person.
After we add that in, we're going to save over.
Right.
After we add that particular scenario in, we will have saved in that department area over $150,000. So I think that overall, trying to manage the budget within the constraints that the board has placed, that we'll be in good stead. But being conservative and saying at the end of the day that we're going to save money, be able to give the job, or be able to report to our taxpayers and have the information in front of us with the institutional knowledge, I just think that it's just the right thing to do.
I take it we're not being asked to actually approve the amount.
No, you just said
we're just approving the waiver.
The waiver.
That goes before the budget committee?
The waiver itself would go... No.
The amount.
Mm-hmm. The amount of money would go in front of acquisition and contract.
Okay.
We're approving the waiver for Mr. Boland to come back because it's inside of the time frame that he would be allowed to come back. We expect that the administration has indicated that there's a couple of people, not that many, that they are anticipating at this moment in time. And until that hits us in the table, I would not want to share that information because they might change their minds. Some employees have asked for the ability to work in companies, and we'll see those waiver requests. We did ask the administration that to have a process in front of us that would make sense, so that we would be able to expeditiously move forward on waivers at their request that were necessary in order for them, again, in this difficult economic time in the current budget cycle, to be able to make the modifications that are necessary that they have to do.
Any questions for the chair? Do I have a motion to approve the waiver for Mr. Boland?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None? Okay. One more thing for legislation, and that's the minutes of the July 5th meeting.
So moved.
Which you have in front of you.
Second.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
I was not.
Now we can move to the main topic for today's meeting, and we'll call energy and environmental session.
Okay. Welcome, everybody. I'd like to call the Committee on Environment and Energy into session. We have a quorum with Legislators Testa, Legislators Myers, and would like to very proudly announce three more appointments to legislation, Legislators Burton, Legislator Nona, and our newest legislator to join us, both to the board and this committee, Legislator Marcotte. So welcome. Welcome. All right, so today we're beginning what will be a rather lengthy and complex discussion of flood legislation. This is going to be several meetings, so as we always say, everyone's going to have ample opportunity for input. If not this meeting, we're going to have several more meetings on this. I know Legislator Nona and I are both committed to see this through however long it takes and where it takes. So just to give you a little overview of what we'd like to accomplish today, I think we'd like to start out with Peter Eschweiler. Peter, if you'd like to join us at the table, who's the former Commissioner of Planning and current head of the Flood Action Task Force. What we'd like to do today is we'd like to get a little background on the record from Peter about what we're doing with flood funding right now. Then what we would like to do is get two brief summaries of the two pieces of legislation before us, one from Legislator Abinanti and Legislator Myers. The other is from the Lyswick folks. We'll have a presentation on each of those. Then we'll get Mr. Eschweiler back for his thoughts on both of them. Yes, please do, and then we'll open it up to a discussion depending on time. Sound like a plan?
Sounds good to me. Let's find out who's here.
If I may, I would like to bring to everybody's attention we are in the presence of a number of honorables. We have the Honorable Mayor of the Village of Largemont, Josh Mandel, is with us. We have Village of Largemont Trustee Ann McAndrews with us. We have the Honorable Mayor of the City of Rye, Doug French. And there she is, I didn't see you, the Honorable Phyllis Whitner from the Town of Amerenik, all of which are heavily flooded areas, I should mention. And we are also joined by City of Rye personnel, City of Scarsdale personnel, and as well as members of the Flood Action Task Force. And I would say all of the interested parties know what it's like to walk around in about 3 feet of water, so at least.
Okay,
so Peter, please.
Thank you very much, Chairman, and distinguished members of the committee, members of the audience. Let me distribute this yellow sheet of, set of papers.
Thank you, sir.
The gist of what the Flood Action Task Force has been doing, observing, and recommending for the past 3 years. Let me say that the Flood Action Task Force has no basis in legislation. As we proudly say, we exist by virtue of a press release. And the press release came about at the time of the Flood Summit in June of 2007, following the devastating floods along the Long Island Sound Shore in the spring of that year. County Executive Andrew Spano announced at the Flood Summit that he was appointing a task force to deal with three basic issues in the area of flooding. The first was to facilitate intermunicipal exchange of information on flood matters and remedial measures. Secondly, was to assist the municipalities in applying for a new capital program that he announced. Chris, you need more? He announced whereby he would establish a five-year program in the capital program of the county, the first year of which would be in the county's capital budget, of $10 million a year for those 5 years to provide for the first time assistance from the county to the municipalities to undertake flood mitigation measures at the local level, which were of an immediacy or perhaps of a smaller scale that you could not wait for the Corps of Engineers or one of the other more massive funding programs to do. The third responsibility we were given, very broad and not defined at all, was to undertake a countywide stormwater management plan in each of the six major watersheds of Westchester County. The first year of our existence, we devoted ourselves to perfecting the application procedure for municipalities to apply for these county grants. We started in 2007. There was nothing in the budget, of course, until January of 2008, and it was in 2008 that the first of the programs began to take shape. We received applications from 13 different municipalities for 12 separate projects, and of those, we advanced, and your board has approved four of those first projects for county cost sharing. This is a very satisfactory program. I would say if it had stalled at this stage, it has stalled not because of lack of interest or eligible projects, but the fact that under the guidelines, municipalities are asked to pay up to 50%, and that's basically where it sits, 50% of the cost of the construction project. The problems in many municipalities is raising that 50% of the project, and I think that has stalled a number of them as far as we know. Some other observations on our work in those first 3 years. We're sometimes spoken of as dealing with flood control, and we think that is a misnomer and should not be used in any legislation that you're considering, because it sets too high a standard, too high a level of expectation for the citizens of the county that you're going to stop flooding. The best we think we can offer at this stage of the county's development is a means of mitigating flood damage by sound procedures, by constructional methods, best management practices, whatever it might take. We are convinced, I think, the 10 members of the task force, that there is and should be a strong role for the county in stormwater management. And this comes from a board of 10 members who have diverse backgrounds, but yet share a common concern for flooding. We have on our board four elected officials initially, representing interestingly four different levels of government: county through Judy Legislator Myers, cities, Mayor Steve Otis, towns, Supervisor Valerie O'Keefe, and villages, Bob Williams from Elmsford. We had four county former commissioners, as we say, earning our pensions, as volunteers. Frank Bolander had been the Commissioner of Public Works, and he, because of his personal situation, could not attend and asked to be dropped from the list. He lives either in Florida or Fulton County. Charles Pound is the former Parks, Recreation, and Conservation Commissioner and a very active conservationist, and a person who, for his personal business, is very experienced in dredging projects for water management. We have Tony Landy, former Commissioner of Environmental Facilities, and shares the unique role that he's also been chairman of the Public Works, or excuse me, the Commissioner of Public Works Department, and myself from planning. We added several other additional people because of their expertise. We've appointed a professional engineer, Susan Bosnack, who is here today, formerly of Charles Sell's organization. We have Dennis Noskin, a licensed architect representing the Westchester Business Council and their viewpoint on this.
And he's here. Okay. He did arrive.
Very good. And hi, Dan. And then we have Rick Herbeck, former administrator in the village of Croton on Hudson and journeyman municipal manager at the moment, acting as manager in the city of Beacon. And don't grow old.
Could you speak up, sir?
I would if I could remember what I was going to say.
Either one.
This is news I forgot. Well, anyway. We are 10 people. We come from diverse backgrounds, and we think that that is a very valuable aspect that you should consider when you look at whom you would be appointing to any of the advisory boards, the type of people you would appoint to advisory boards in this program. We think it's more important than simple geographic distribution. We find that cost-sharing programs are an excellent way of getting the attention of the municipalities. I tell the story that 25 years ago, when we studied this, when I was still commissioner, we did a dog and pony show throughout the county to ask municipalities, do you feel that there is a role for county in municipal flood management? And their answer we characterized by saying, just send us the money and stay home. But the fact that for the first time the county was able, through Mr. Spano's program, to get this thing up and going, I think is shows that that is a proper role for the county to undertake. We asked in our application of our applicants that they not simply come in with the concept of a problem, but they come in with the basis for an engineering solution to it. That they have to have done local studies, hired their own engineering staff, done the basic groundwork to come up with a project or a list of feasible projects from the engineering standpoint that, if funded, could be carried on through construction drawings and then taken on to implementation. The idea of simply doing feasibility studies with the original county program that was in the capital budget, we felt would not be an effective expenditure of those funds. We stressed, too, that we wanted municipalities to approach their problems on a regional basis, dealing with intermunicipal aspects of the problems. And in a sense, we gave brownie points to projects that did cross municipal boundaries and felt that they should have a higher priority. We thought that we investigated the rules and procedures that the county now has on its books and found that there are organizations and pieces of legislation which could be used effectively and more effectively if they were either strengthened or their jurisdiction broadened. For example, the Soil and Water Conservation District was created in the late 1960s specifically to address flood problems, in this case in the Blind Brook watershed. And I think that their programs have drifted off into other areas, perhaps because there was funding in those other areas, but that body might be used effectively in your program. Similarly, the Public Works Department has a stream channel law on its books, which gives them the review authority over projects that occur either within a stream channel line as mapped by the county or within 100 feet of it, with the idea that activities in those areas should be regulated so that they did not adversely affect the ability of the stream channel to carry stormwater. And that is when it was originally created back in the late 1940s and 50s as a result of the 1945 Harding Report, that was seen as a very effective thing for the county to do. It had fallen into disuse because municipalities generally were not aware of it. They did not realize that they had to submit to the county Public Works Department for review projects which had come before them. We have, in the course of our 3-year history, we have sent out letters encouraging municipal officials to be aware of this and to submit these projects for review. And we think that this could be effective if it were expanded. Now, the mapping of a stream channel line is as rigid as the mapping of a highway right-of-way. It's a major surveying project and therefore could be quite expensive if the county were to choose that way of expanding it. And we have recommended in draft legislation, which I don't know if it's you've received it yet, but it's cocked and ready to go in public works or the administrative branch, which would expand the stream channel line effectively by using other people's maps, particularly the FEMA maps, Federal Emergency Management Agency maps, which have already mapped the serious flood zones in the county. And by simply adopting those serious flood zones as subject to the jurisdiction of the stream channel law, in one stroke you have greatly increased the effective control of stream channels without the expense of doing the survey. The other thing that has arisen is the fact that we believe that there are really no major opportunities to do anything significant in the large scale of a stormwater detention facility, a major reservoir or incipient reservoir to hold back stormwater. The county is just simply too developed in the areas that would benefit most from that, particularly southern Western. So therefore, we have encouraged our municipalities and encouraged the thinking to do a series of small stormwater detention facilities along a single watershed, sort of a rosary effect of smaller ones, which individually may not seem important, but collectively can play a more major role. We, through the efforts of the Public Works Department and also Commissioner Pound of our task force, we investigated a number of occasions on county land where the county could itself take measures independent of municipal requests to establish flood management procedures and therefore reduce the flow on streams, particularly the Bronx River right away, which is the case where the county already owns much of the right of way. We felt that these areas could also be used effectively as demonstration sites for best management practices, sort of a laboratory where you can show to engineers and municipal officials and so on there. That's what we're talking about when we say you should do thus and so. And as a corollary, we think that the county should be sure that when it grants contracts that affect stormwater rights of way, that those projects, although they may be billed as habitat restoration or some other good purpose, also include and probably, hopefully, maximize the best management practices for stormwater management.
Could I just interject at one point for those of us who are on budget and appropriation? One of those items came through this morning and was passed. Two of them was passed out of budget and appropriations and should be voted on this evening with regard to the Bronx River Parkway.
Okay, why don't you explain what
the Bronx River. Delete Parkway.
Why don't you explain what those were?
These were expenditures that would be offset with grant money that has been brought in through
Fish and Wildlife Service.
That would actually pay for the restoration of stream banks along the Bronx River in certain areas that not only traps the non-point source pollution that flows in, but it also acts to stabilize the banks to hopefully eliminate some of the erosion and sediment that goes into the rivers, and in this case, the Bronx River. And this was something that the Flood Action Task Force focused in on largely because with the county owning that property, we could be very quick about it, as opposed to other parcels of land that are not owned by the county.
And as a corollary of that, we think that not only should you look on county properties where you can do things in the future, but perhaps where you can improve the situation as it exists today by retrofitting parking lots or other facilities, detention facilities and so on, by improving what was put in 20, 25, 30, 40 years ago. These are the gist of what we have done over the last 3 years, where we feel the county should be going, whichever path you take with regard to stormwater management. I think the whole thing rests on the hinge point of will and can the county continue to fund these types of municipal aid programs. Because there's no point in adopting extensive legislation that sort of hinges on the ability of the county to cost share if you're going to say, well, of course we can't afford it. So that, I think, is perhaps an overriding situation as we have it now.
Well, and I think to that point, that's why we're here, because last year when we made some major expenditures, it was the will of this board to continue doing that, but we wanted to codify how we were going to do that. And to your point that your task force was really created in a press release, we wanted as a board to codify a policy, a public policy toward dealing with flooding in the county. And one of the things that drove that also was state law, state county law, that identifies flooding as a general county purpose. Mm-hmm. So those were the two right. factors.
I think the other thing which we realize that the approach, that is a wise approach because it assures uniformity throughout the county. I think that, you know, the danger of balkanizing Westchester too much is that you have one set of standards you use in that area, and you modify a little bit somewhere else, and the people are saying, well, they did it, why can't we do it?
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
The other important consideration is these issues are span municipal borders. What one municipality does could affect another, and they're common problems as well. So to the extent we can achieve a regional approach, that's a good objective.
Well, I will say this in summary, that I think those of us who've served on the task force over the last 10 years have really enjoyed it. It's helpful to be doing this. We're all volunteers. And other than the fact that we got a badge that lets us walk through the gate downstairs, there are many other benefits to it.
Priceless.
Priceless, right. We're happy to do that. I find it a great personal satisfaction to be back in the county after 20 years of theoretical retirement.
We appreciate all your work.
We really, everyone on the task force, we appreciate all your service. All right, don't go away, because I guess we want presentations. Yeah, Chris.
I don't know if Mr. Pound had mentioned something.
Yes,
he also.
I was going to ask former Commissioner Pound if he'd like to add to what former Commissioner Eschweiler had to say. Come on, join us.
Thank you. Can I come up here?
Please.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen of the board. This is 35 years since I've been in the eighth floor of the building here. So.
Between the two of you, I guess.
It has changed
quite a series of years of
I will be as succinct as I can be in interest of time. Everybody on the task force and most of the people in the county know me as a hands-on person. And so I do get a little bit short in my dealing with a lot of paperwork. So if I may, just quickly, the background. Here in the county, I was here from 1955 to 75 as park commissioner. I came in a very unusual way under Jimmy Hopkins, who was then the county executive. I took a nationwide civil service examination for the position of general superintendent in the park, old park commission. When they abolished the Park Commission and the Recreation Commission into the Department of Parks, Recreation, and Conservation during the charter revision, I was appointed at that time by County Executive McCallion to serve as the first commissioner in the department. In those days, we had four H's here in the county. County Executive Hopkins, Jimmy Harding, who was the Commissioner of Public Works, George Haight was the Superintendent of Parks, and Harry Herman was the county attorney. Right after I came, we switched over to the four P's, Pomeroy, Prezioso, Pound, and Peterson. The first three, Pomeroy, Pound, and Prezioso, were what we call three P's in a pod. We were all trying to work out things for the county and acquire a lot more county parklands and so forth. Jack Peterson, who was the budget director, he was the P outside the pod because he didn't necessarily jive with us. So. But we had a lot of fun out of it. I believe just by chronological age, I'm probably the oldest person here. And by resident in Westchester County, I'm probably the only longest resident because I was born in Yonkers in 1919, so that will put a little tag on it. And one of my fondest recollections of Yonkers was during the Boy Scouts. They had a once a year they appointed a Boy Scout to represent each elected official, and I was appointed to serve on the traffic board, and I had the privilege of directing traffic in Getty Square, five different streets coming in at the same time with only two hands. So. And the person that I reported to was right in back of me. I'm sure he was the one that was controlling traffic, was a patrolman by the name of Jimmy Boland, and he had a great effect on my life as I grew up in Westchester County. He was very good. Three years ago, then County Executive General called me and asked me if I would serve on a flood control panel. And with due respect, I said, no, thank you. And he said, why? And I said, because just by its very terminology, we're doomed to failure. I said, you can't control the flood. And he said, well, what should we call it? And I came out of the Blue Flood Action Task Force, which didn't commit us to control one. And so we have met, as Peter has said, very diligently for a period of 3 years. And I must say that, again, I think that it's been very diligent in the work we've been doing. I'm very disappointed that after 3 years of producing reams of paper and restudying studies that have been made over and over again, that we haven't got a spade in the ground yet after 3 years. As I say, as a hands-on person, I think there are a lot of things that should be done and could be done if we just have the will and the authority to do it. We have made studies on studies. The Corps of Engineers has studied the Bronx River now on three different occasions. They all go back to the original 1945 study by Jim Harding, who was then the Commissioner of Public Works. And all these other studies have done basically is chew up the old studies and regurgitate them. And they haven't come up with any new ideas. The Corps of Engineers concept of straightening everything out and making it go as fast as it can down to the lower end is still the basic premise of what they're doing. Just within the past few days in the newspaper, there was an article saying that, I believe it's Mamaroneck, has just entered into a new study. The study that was made in 1986, now they consider it to be obsolete because things have changed. And so, their study is going to be completed, hopefully, by 2015. That's the end of the study.
They've also termed it a fast track study.
Yeah, providing they do it, and providing you get appropriations and so forth and so on. So, all I'm building up to is that there is a job that can be done here in the county. I think it's necessary to do it, and I think it can be done, but we have to come up with a lot of different ways to get it accomplished. One of the things that Peter mentions several times, and I will take credit, Peter, for getting the into the lexicon, the difference between detention and retention. If you retain water in a pond, if you have a dam, and you retain the water in there, for one, every drop that comes in at the upper end goes over the dam at the other end. It doesn't do a single thing to abate flooding. The difference in detention is when you have a pond and you have a dam. 3 or 4 feet down from the crest of the dam, you have a pipe that can take the normal flow of the stream. When you get heavy excess rainfall, it has the ability to impound water and let it go down at a discharge rate. The Bronx River, the only way it can be studied and be effective is to start at the lower end of the river and determine the maximum carrying capacity of the river at its lowest end. Then you have to work backwards on every tributary stream that's coming in and determine how much can be added to the stream flow so that it doesn't exceed the capacity of the river. It's a super simple concept. What we have done is, I personally, and then with the members of the task force, I have taken a walk the entire length of the Bronx River Parkway from Kensico Reservoir all the way down to the New York City line and actually down into the Bronx Zoo and the Botanical Gardens down there, and have plotted on maps every single point that can be used for a detention basin. It doesn't take a study by the Corps of Engineers for 10 years to decide where those places are. It can be done, and to a great extent, it could even be done in-house. We've the county has awarded several contracts now to make these what I call esoteric studies of how you're going to predict rainfall and what you're going to do about it after it rains and everything else. This is a hands-on type of thing that can be solved, and any new legislation should take this into consideration. Also, in the county itself, there has to be a resolution between some conflicting ideas. On the Bronx River Parkway, the only major water body right now that could act as a major detention basin is the Crestwood Lake, which you can walk across right now. It is absolutely filled up. My company dredged that pond about 10 years ago. At the present time, the plan, as I understand it, that has been advocated by the Parks Department, is to make a channel down through the middle of it. And when I asked why, instead of restoring it to its original size and shape, and also to include detention capacity in there, they said it was monetary consideration. But if you just make a channel down through there, you're not going to do a single thing to abate any flooding whatsoever. So I think there has to be within the county itself a determination of what happens.
Sure.
One second. 10 years ago, you wound up taking the silt and everything out of Crestwood Lake?
Yes, sir.
Do you recall what the cost was 10 years ago?
I furnished that to the Department of Public Works, I believe. Don't hold me to it. In those days, it was around $180,000, somewhere in that vicinity.
The problem is with that project is getting the silt somewhere else, whether it's contaminated at all.
Well, what did you do with the prior silt?
Where the Public Works garage is now on the Bronx River Parkway, just north of the Crestwood Lake, there was a big area up in there that we pumped all the material into that area. It has now been used for storage yards and distance.
Without committing to a figure 10 years later, I understand rate of inflation. What do you think it would cost now?
That's impossible. I can't give you that for only one purpose. Now, according to the laws, we would have to go in there and test all that material for contamination because you don't have any place to retain it on site. Now, there is one concept that I've suggested to them is that you take that material and build up the banks all along it with the material that you're excavating out. And that will now form your detention capacity in there.
Gordon, can I make a suggestion? Let's take this offline. We want to stick to the big picture here, not just one specific project. Thanks.
So with all those observations that I've made, I would strongly recommend, first of all, a lot of the things, if you form these districts, the work has to be done in the upland areas of the streams where they don't flood out at the present time. Those people have no particular interest for any flood abatement downstream. And so there's going to have to be the proper mechanism that everybody considers as a regional responsibility and do the work up in North Salem and South Salem and Pound Ridge and all the other places where it has, where you can do it. Concept that I think should be incorporated into the legislation. Absolutely, very, very strong input on detention versus retention. It's a completely different concept, and it should be done. To the extent that you can and include it in the legislation, there should be no net runoff on any new developments. It's entirely possible to design projects so that you don't get any runoff over and above what the normal runoff would be if it was an undeveloped piece of property. That can be done by two things. Number one, using pervious pavements on parking areas and so forth, and then taking that material and put it into underground storage tanks for temporary detention until it can run off the appropriate way. This is not a new concept. I happen to be over in Tunisia and over there, and they have Roman underground storage tanks that they collected water in during the heavy rainfall. And then all during the long dry periods, they actually took it through aqueducts and took it down into the municipalities. So this is not a new concept that's just coming down the pike. As I say, you must come up with a county policy on what we're doing on our own lands. We have two examples now that are, to me, they're embarrassing, where money was spent on two projects on county lands. Or at least municipal lands, which have not only not done anything to improve flood control, but actually have been a negative impact because instead of hauling material away, they just took it from one end of what was the big pond and piled it up in the other end to reduce the water capacity of the pond by almost 50%. Now, that's absolutely contrary to any common sense. So these are the thoughts that I leave with you, and I think it's a very important thing to do. But we have to make absolutely sure that we don't get lost in a whole bunch of these esoteric studies and the plans and everything. It's a hands-on type of thing that we do. Just very quickly, I deal every day with 5 Corps of Engineer districts, 11 state DEC, DEPs, or whatever it is, and literally hundreds of local municipal boards and committees and everything. And the contradiction, the duplication, and the complication of some of the processes that we have to go through is just almost impossible to do things. I was invited just recently to serve on a committee to make recommendations to the state for administrative changes that could be made in the CEQA law. There was a panel of approximately 20 of us. I spent 3 months interviewing practitioners of architects, lawyers, engineers, and so forth who practice this. And we came out with one major concept, that it is the greatest law that ever had was filled with disincentives instead of any incentives to accomplish anything. And as I spoke to engineers off the record, they say this is the greatest law. It gives them a permit to print money. Because every time you have a public hearing, it goes back to the engineers and they study it, and then it goes back again and goes back again. And finally, you wear people out and just give it up. We're looking right now at a project up in North Salem on a private piece of property, big piece of property, that they have been required in order to get the permits to dredge out a pond on the property. Over $100,000 between lawyers' fees and the fees going back and forth to get their permits. And that's just, and it's almost, it's equal to the cost of the project. So we have to come up with reasonable regulations that will protect the environment, mitigate flooding, and also, but be reasonable in what we do.
Thank you. All right, great. Thank you for your presentation. All right, thank you. So moving ahead, now we'd like to get summaries of each of the two laws. Is somebody here from Lyswick who would care to give us, come on up and identify yourself for the record and give us a brief presentation? And then we'll have either Legislator Myers or Legislator Abinanti or both talk about their bill. And then we'll bring back former Commissioner Eschweiler to give his take on both of them.
No. Yeah,
it might go back to that. I think our members have been introduced, but very quickly.
Thank you. That's a good idea.
Is that all right?
Yeah, please.
We have the mayors of the Village of Larchmont, Josh Mandel, and Doug French from Rye. And next to him is his city manager, Scott Pickup. We have Valerie O'Keefe, who's the supervisor of Town of Mamaroneck. Who else is back there, please? Village of Mamaroneck, we have both village managers, Rick Slingerland and Dan Sarnoff. Anybody else?
Yes, we have Peggy Jackson from the Flood Committee in the Village of Mamaroneck.
I thought, well, Steve Otis, of course, was a very important member of Lyswick. I hope to stay with us in his role as the former city of Rye mayor. We have Ann McAndrews from trustee from the Village of Larchmont, and behind her, Elizabeth Paul, who's the environmental coordinator both for Lyswick and the town of Mamaroneck. I'm Phyllis Whitner, old timer.
And I'm Al Gatta. I'm the village manager in Scarsdale. And longtime member of Lyswick. Lyswick's been around for like a decade and a half. Phyllis was the longtime chair who just stepped down this year. But just I think I will be good to my word. If I say I'm going to try to be brief, I'll try to be brief. But you do need a minute or two about where we have just come from and why we are here now.
Take your time. We're not doing it all this meeting, so we're going to have a couple of these meetings, maybe more. So as much detail as you need.
Well, for the last 5 years, Liswick has been working on a regional approach to stormwater management. And the communities in Liswick haven't been together for a number of years and established some degree of relationship and trust. We were able to secure various grants to study the creation of a stormwater management district. And that would have been created by special legislation. And the bottom line with that is it would address stormwater on a regional basis. It would address it on a drainage basin basis, which is the only way. And we would utilize the existing ones that were so carefully analyzed and drawn up by the county. We had all sorts of nice ideas in that legislation, which required a lot of things that had to be committed on behalf of the communities in order to get this rolling. This regional structure that we envisioned with this special act was going to be something different for Westchester. Normally Westchester, and understandably so, with its strong county government, had regional programs organized by the county and understood. Well, this special legislation was going to be patterned after a lot of regional planning agencies that are in other states, and that it was going to be run and operated by the municipalities. And not only that, but it required funding mechanisms and so forth that were built into the special act, and that was a very progressive fee that we were considering, which is common again throughout the country, based on how much water you hold on site and how much water you don't hold on site. So we were going down a little different path than the county because we were interested in local control and local input, and we were interested in the funding. And then, you know, 2 years ago came the new world with the economy and the finances and the various feelings about local government and layering on to local government. So we made a turn, a 90-degree turn. And the turn we made is we thought that it would make sense to try to put something together with the existing regional agency, which was the county, and try to integrate some of the concepts that we had in this special act. So what we were working on, and we were working on with your predecessor, Mr. Alvin Ante there, we've been working on with your predecessors, is a county, a draft of a county law with some concepts and theories of how we think we can achieve stormwater management much more effectively than we can now. For example, I think you heard from the previous two speakers, people who made presentations, there are certain limitations to the county's jurisdiction. For example, you do not regulate land locally, therefore you can't hold water up land. Well, municipalities can. And a number of things like that, where we thought that we would create a partnership. Now, in order for this partnership to work with the county would have to have certain responsibilities. And since this is not going to be a free ride, the municipalities would have to step up with some responsibilities. All of these responsibilities that we had included in our draft legislation, which is somewhat similar to your latest iteration, which is the March 18th legislation, everything we put in there was based on what the county's objectives were as provided in reading the material and as talking to a few legislators. So it wasn't anything formal. Here are our five objectives, but it was pretty understandable and pretty reasonable. We didn't have to search any further. So we would each have prescribed responsibilities. Now, how do you get the communities to work together? How do you get the communities to work together and plan together? How do you get the communities to work together and decide who gets the first grant in the capital plan? Well, we came up with the idea that the county would be the leader and would provide incentives for the municipalities to do certain things. All the things that the county knows that should be done, but it can't do itself, can't be expected to do itself. You do not have the jurisdiction or the authority, but the municipalities have, who have shown in the past an inability to work together. So the county would provide the leadership and the incentives and would require the communities to do certain things in order to be eligible for county grants along the lines that Peter was talking about, only a little more structured and a little more formal. For example, for municipalities to be eligible for this partnership, the municipalities would have to organize on a watershed basis. They would have to prepare coherent, effective watershed capital plans and establish capital priorities. Because one of the problems is not only putting together the capital plan, but establishing the priorities. You know that communities, as much as we desire to work together, we compete with one another. And certainly with the grant that came out, which my community was very grateful for receiving, we were in competition with other communities. And what we wanted to do is find a way where the county can be confident that the recommendation of a watershed-wide plan and a priority process for the capital projects is agreed upon by the municipality to start out with. So you don't have this basis of what I used to describe in the past of putting a little worm in each person's mouth and having them run off with a smile, but you really can't accomplish anything large and so forth. So they would have to prepare county-wide watershed capital plans, adopt priorities, and come up with the project priorities. The municipalities would also have to adopt BMPs, best management practices, relative to stormwater, that would, among other things, and you could never do this unless we were in partnership and there was an incentive, that would require local municipalities to make certain expenditures in their municipal operating budgets for maintenance of the stormwater appurtenances. Because after all, if we're building multi-million dollar stormwater facilities and they're not being maintained, we're not using our money most effectively. So the county certainly can't do that because of your jurisdiction, but with the incentives that's created for the municipalities, the municipalities will do it. Without getting in a whole lot of differences between your March 18th draft and our draft, which I have submitted, I don't know if anyone went around with it, I just wanted to highlight the major themes of our legislation and your legislation, if just a little thought out a bit further, can do some of the things that the municipalities need to become a real legitimate partner and also to enter a partnership with the county where one can be trusted and reliable. So some of the themes and the highlights in our legislation are, as I say, things that were mentioned by Peter and Charlie, isn't it?
Charlie.
Mm-hmm. Hello, Charlie. Well, first of all, the county would require the municipalities to organize and plan on a watershed basis. The county would require these watershed communities with their own resources, to show that we can work together, do something extraordinary, and that would be to adopt a comprehensive watershed plan and prioritize the capital projects so we could avoid that unnecessary competition among municipalities. That when you finally award a project, it may not be the most beneficial. But at least this way we would have a watershed plan that's agreed upon by the communities. So if Community A is getting the grant in year one, Community D knows that year three or four, they're coming up on the capital plan. And this way it will have everyone working together. The legislation, a main thought of it would be that it would incentivize municipalities. It would require them, which in fact they filed the full course on this, to provide the daily maintenance of drains, the daily maintenance of street cleaning. I mean, the county doesn't sweep my streets, but you know that's a very significant factor in preventing the siltation and damaging of the facilities that we're trying to improve by spending millions of dollars. The municipalities would be expected to plan in detention bases in these plans. Now, again, that emphasizes that if you can't hold water upland, then you have to hold it in your main streams. And your main streams, such as the Bronx River, has some challenges. But the more you can hold upstream, the more effective the Bronx River becomes, the more effective the Hutch becomes, the more effective the Sheldrake becomes, and the more effective the Marmarion becomes. They all end up in Long Island Sound. So it's a matter of proper detention. It would also require incentivize on the local communities to make wetland repairs to the wetlands and manage the wetlands. This is something that has to go, I think, with the multi-million dollar program that the county will get involved in. Otherwise, you're not really addressing it comprehensively. You're building wonderful projects, but they're not being maintained, and none of the ancillary stuff can be maintained that are so important in controlling the runoff. Municipalities would have to do pipe replacements when they're broke, and they would have to come up with policies and guidelines that have long been sought by the county, but the way we were organized, they were unachievable. You cannot force municipalities to adopt local laws or ordinances that have very strict stormwater management procedures. So, we also built in, at least the law we submitted, was an alternative to utilizing county general fund funding for, let's say, supporting borrowing, bonding for these projects. And what we included in our legislation, which is by option for the county, would be that the county could do what's done in many other areas. You could adopt a fee structure for stormwater management that is really based on an incentive program for property owners to hold as much water as they can on their property and to have their property be as non-porous as possible. Throughout the country, the fees have been established based on a formula basis, based on the percentage of porous to non-porous. It can get a little more sophisticated than that. And that's the amount of fee someone pays on an annual basis. When we were talking about a regional agency, we put together what would be a regional fee. We studied all this. We received $100,000 from the state of New York to study this kind of thing. We put together a whole plan. We came up with a mock budget. We came up with a fee system. We came up with the revenue for that fee system. We came up with a mock capital program. We came up with revenue estimates from the fees that would be able to support capital projects. But all this could be done under the county's leadership and county's aegis, and it would be much easier and better to control. So there's an option in there rather than using county general fund monies, but that's a policy decision for the county. Our legislation would require the capital programs to be put together by the communities. And a very important aspect of that is local input. One of the things that have bothered us over the years, and you must have heard it in many stories, that we don't have enough input. We do not have enough say in things that affect the communities. And I don't want to get on past issues, but the solid waste district would be one of them. The sewer district would be another. What this legislation would do would structure a system where the county would have the final determination, would provide a leadership, have the final determination of approving watershed plans and capital priorities. The work would be done by the communities. The local decision model I'm making we have is not taking any authority away from the county at all. After all, we can't. You're going to need the jurisdiction because you're going to be approving the plans in the end, and you're going to be providing funding for the projects in the end. But what it does do, this model, it allows the communities to work together and straighten their differences out in the preparation of the plan. The plan would be paid and financed by the communities. And they would do that because our legislation recommends that a district watershed advisory board be created that will magnify the local decision making and by the preparation and recommendation of basin-wide plans and agreement on project priorities and the implementation of capital projects within the watershed. So the whole thing is based on communities cooperating together, making the investment, committing to certain things that the county could never do, and it also is based on a partnership with the county, establishing the roadway and the funding mechanism and incentives for making this happen, with the final authority being held by the county. And essentially, that's the legislation.
I think, if I may, one aspect that gives me concern, excuse me, is the advisory board. As you well know, the county is divided into six watersheds. I can't understand how one advisory board can really deal with all the issues of every municipality under that umbrella. If you recall, some 12 years ago, I think it is, the Department of Planning, County Department of Planning, actually they did this map, dividing the county into watersheds. And from that came the watershed advisory committees. I think the county completed three. I sat on two different boards. My point being that the county brought their studies down to the municipal levels. Those of us who sat on the committees represented every municipality in that one watershed they were studying. My only suggestion would be, and to this day I should add, not all of the recommendations, which were excellent, were carried out by the municipalities, because those people who were serving on these advisory boards or committees were not public officials. And they were volunteers with expertise, but they didn't have the experience, and perhaps I'll call it the clout, to go back and get some of the necessary laws enacted. So it sounds very cumbersome. However, I would only add to the county legislation, or amend it, so that their advisory boards are really on a local level to do what Al is talking about, to implement these recommendations and have the power to carry them out. That's a major difference that I see.
And that's very critical to organize on a watershed basis. It's very critical, and this is what the proposed legislation suggests.
Well, the main difference between your legislation and the other proposal is the creation of the six separate districts as opposed to one district.
That's one of the differences.
But ultimately, it flows up to the Commissioner of Planning, right, and the Commissioner of Public Works to approve these projects and the water.
But how it gets there? how it gets here in the meantime is very different in that
right.
it allows the communities a lot of input, but also puts the burden on the communities to draft the watershed plan.
I mean, we could see, personally, I could see the advantage of that, but on the other hand, in this day and age, people are complaining about the proliferation of districts and governments, and so we have to figure out how do we mesh that concern with the very legitimate concern that you want a you want the local municipalities to have an important voice and level of influence in what happens because it affects their communities, and you want them working together. So that model that you propose achieves that. But then we come up against this more recent...
But what we did, because we had to give up on our district authority, is we created a model that could not be seen as Laranon government. It uses the mechanisms in place.
Well, that's the
it
key.
Doesn't create any new level of governance.
You have the chief elective officer
who would serve on a district advisory committee to create the watershed plan and capital project plan.
Well, that sounds like a good segue here. Stay where you are. Let's hear from the sponsors of the other piece of legislation. Forgive me and forgive us, those of you who are well versed in all this. Part of this is just establishing for the record where we've come from and where we might like to get to. So that's why if any of this is redundant for some of you, it's new for others. So at this point,
let me introduce Tom.
Yeah.
If I could.
Sure.
Legislator Abinanti had come up with an idea for some kind of stormwater management, countywide stormwater management legislation a number of years ago. And as the representative to the flood task force, the flood action task force, in all of the background preparation that we did in year one, what became very apparent was that in most of the country, in the United States, it's really the counties that have the flood control, if you will, especially in the more flood-prone states. And the county definitely has the land use authority also. So what we began to see when we were looking at other states and talking to some of the engineers were very large tracts of land that were county-owned, that were used as detention facilities. When they were drained out, they could be nice soccer fields, but when they filled up, they performed the flood detention chores. Unfortunately, in New York State and Westchester County, we don't have that ability to, the county doesn't control all the land, as you pointed out. I will turn this over to Legislator Abinanti, because he was really the author of this, but I think what became very clear to me in reading both the Liswick proposal and Legislator Abinanti's proposal was, while they come at it from two different ends, they're ultimately asking for the same thing, whether you do it as on a countywide basis or by individual stormwater districts, the idea being that we have to tackle it as a whole county. That we cannot tackle it with 43 different municipalities. And I think that's been evidenced by the increased flooding that we've seen. As we've increased our 43 municipal-wide developments, we've increased our flooding. And that's just part of the equation. So with that, I will turn it over to to describe the meat and potatoes.
Well, I think I'm going to be very brief because I think most people are familiar with what it is we're proposing. Plus, we're not wedded to any particular language or any particular proposal. The whole concept here was to get us talking about this, of working together. And I think we've accomplished that. It's taken several years, but this is not the first time we've been together at the table. And every time we've been together at the table, we've said, well, how can we work together? I kind of see this as that story of the blindfolded people or the blind people who were, you know, feeling the elephant. And one person says, it's hard and big. And somebody else says, gee, it's got a big nose. And somebody else says, gee, it's got a long tail. Well, it's kind of up to this committee to put together, to sketch out the whole picture, to draw the composite, and to figure out a way where we can get all these different points of view working together, because nothing's going to work if we don't work together. And as Legislator Meyer said, I don't think there's a conflict in objectives here. And I don't think there's really a conflict in approaches either. I mean, your legislation came about because we've all had some conversations. And we were kind of like at loggerheads at one point, and we said, well, wait a minute. Let's try to combine the approaches. Because originally you wanted to do your own thing, and it's very clear the state legislature is not going to give you your own district. So we came up with the idea of maybe we can facilitate what you want to do and use some of your ideas on a countywide basis, and at the same time figure out how we can draft some legislation which necessarily puts us at the top, because we've got the overall perspective. We somewhere along the way you have to have somebody step back and say, wait a minute, that's a good idea, but the real problem is up here. And while you want to solve this problem over here, we can help you solve this problem over here if we really solve this problem over here, which is the less expensive way to do it. So I think we have a good start in all these different pieces of legislation. I think we have to be flexible. I think each watershed, one of the things I do want to say is I don't know that we can be as specific for each watershed as you were as specific in yours. Because you have you've got an organization already working together. And what I think some of us envision is set up a county operation. The task force on which Legislator Meyer sat shows that the county does have a role in this, that the county can work with local governments and facilitate projects, but we do need something more permanent. We do need a structure.
No, I understand that. Let me just mention that under the model that we have, the county does retain the ultimate authority for plans and whatever. But we were hoping that the county, rightfully, would step forward and provide a leadership role, rather than dictating to the communities, because you know that doesn't work, what they should be doing. And the county would encode that in their law, and that the communities would have to achieve certain tasks before they would be eligible for the rainbow at the end of the moon. And that's the point. Unless the communities are organized, you're not going to get the comprehensive approach. We're going to spend $2 million on one detention basin, and no one's going to maintain the pipes coming in and out. And what you want to do is create incentives for that to happen, and you want to do that within the law. I think it's true that we are further ahead than maybe some of the other watersheds, but if the county were to approach it like this, it is incumbent upon these communities and these watersheds to get together and work together. I mean, you're going to sit back and wait for the county to come in and bail us out? I mean, no. The communities have to have certain responsibilities, and they must fulfill these responsibilities. And with the county leadership and capital funding, then you have something. You have a comprehensive program.
I think what we were doing was looking at it from the county point of view of saying, how do we set up a structure? What you filled in large measure, was the next piece of it, of how does the watershed function? Because we understood, our first draft was to set up a countywide district. And I understand why people were upset with that. But that would have given us a countywide funding mechanism, separate and apart from the general fund. So we tried again. The second iteration was, no, let's just set up a structure from the county point of view. And then our professional staff came in and said, wait a minute, we don't want to dictate to the local governments. We're not going to do the plans. They should be done on watershed by watershed basis. So that's where you came in and gave us an example of what should be done in one watershed. So how we've meshed this together, I think under the law we're responsible. We're going to have to be the board of directors that makes the final determination on everything.
Absolutely.
But we've also had examples of the northern watershed, the northern supervisors. We have a very informal relationship with them, but we don't make any decisions with respect to the monies that we're holding. What's it called? The trust fund.
East of Hudson.
East of Hudson.
Well, but we are by law the trustees of that account.
But that
they
relationship
make the recommendations
works.
And we're the trustees.
But that relationship works. By and large, we follow everything that they tell us. Yeah, exactly. It's a little less formal. But so I think what we're looking for here is to mesh all these ideas together. One of the things that we have to do is put a structure in place for the county. Because there's some serious questions about whether we can act in this area unless we have a formal law that lays out everybody's responsibilities.
And that's what we're trying,
and that's what we're trying to do here. And then, as you say, the municipalities have to buy into this. They've got to be totally bought into it. They've got to know what their rights are, what their responsibilities are. And I don't think the county wants to make all of these decisions day by day.
Absolutely.
The county wants to look and say, we've got a series of proposals coming from Liswick, and they suggest in this order
Yeah, but your rightful role would be oversight.
Right.
To see whether the communities are fulfilling what they're required to do under the terms of the law and under terms of the grant program. A discussion that one of the discussions we had a while back, we explored the possibility, and it's in the law, the option of the county to create a different funding mechanism. It can be done on a watershed basis based on a fee.
Well, if you remember,
based on that progressive,
it may have actually been my idea to use the county power to make you a district.
That's right.
And so, I mean, I wouldn't take that off the table. It's just that the public may not be happy with us creating six districts.
Yeah, but getting back to the districts and the fund.
But it's still on the table, I think.
Getting back to the districts and the potential option for funding, just think of it. You would have the support of all the communities in that watershed, because if the communities in that watershed can't get together and present itself, then it cannot meet the requirements, which are very rational requirements that are being laid out by the county.
But that's why we may want to do each district differently. If you come to us and say, look, we would like to impose a fee upon ourselves, and the only way we can do that after we explore this is to set ourselves up in a district, well, then maybe we want to set you up as a district. You would still not be able to function without the... We would probably have to be the governing body of that district. And so... But still, most of the decisions are going to be made by the local municipalities, because we're not going to impose a tax on you without you saying yes, or a fee, or whatever. Now, when we come across the river, to the other side of the Bronx River, I don't know if the communities that are in the Sawmill District or whatever want a formal district. They may want to function some other way. I think we have to be flexible. We've got to get something going. We've got to get some formal structure going here. So I just end by saying, it looks like we've agreed to agree.
And let's move on. And Peter is very familiar with both of these laws, and maybe you could correct me if I'm wrong. The law that we drafted here, that Tom and Judy drafted, puts the onus on the planning commissioner to come up with a comprehensive flood control plan. And I don't see a lot of input there from the communities. I see it almost the top down.
Yes.
And one of the things that enters my mind is what the cost of that will be, because that can't be done internally. That's going to require outside consultants. Whereas your plan looks like it's more input from the communities.
Well,
might be some of the a greater portion of the expenditure for developing that plan will be paid for by the community.
That's what it says. It says we want to be partners. Mm-hmm. And we will fulfill our obligations, and we want the county to provide the leadership.
That's the way you read
and
it.
Fulfill its obligations.
I read their draft. It says that the local committee members advise the commissioner of planning. It doesn't say they fund what he does. It just says they advise him in the preparation of the plan.
Well, it's two aspects. One's the substantive input, and the other is the funding part.
Well, but even so, as I read it, I believe the commissioner is responsible for preparing the plan with the advice
under the list with the advice.
The way Mr. Gatta has explained it today, it seems that there is, in his view, a stronger role for the advisory board to do the planning and submit their recommendations to the commissioner of planning for his advice.
And they'll probably need outside consultants to do that.
Absolutely. It's not that fine a delineation, though. Yeah. It doesn't have to be.
Can I make a comment on that?
The law does allow for the communities to raise the money and put together the plan. And the process, the ladder it established in the law, is it would have to go to the commissioner of planning. It would have to be reviewed by the commissioner with whatever procedures he has. And then from there, it would have to go to the county board of legislature. And you would have two duties, essentially. Number one, and you would do this once, unless you amend it, you would approve the plan. And then once there's an approved plan, part of that approved plan is the projects and the pecking order and the benefit, the cost benefit of the projects. And then you would approve each project individually as it comes before you. And if I were one of you, the first question I would ask is this project in accordance with the plan that was adopted by us?
Why are we...
Just a comment on that. What you had from us is probably the second or third, maybe fourth iteration of our going through this and trying to draft something. Theirs is the next iteration of it. My guess is we're going to have one or two more combining the two, because these types of issues, you got to have somebody like a planning commissioner in charge. But it's very clear that they're not going to do it by themselves. They really have to work with each community, and how the plan gets, how it gets paid for, and what the input is, and all of that stuff. I think is going to depend on the watershed and how organized the watershed is. We have to push as much responsibility onto the watersheds as possible. But at the same time, in some cases, they're not real organized. And we can't sit around and wait. In other cases where they are organized, well, then clearly, they're going to do most of the work. And how we pay for this is something we're going to have to work out later. I mean, that's going to be one of the big issues. I mean, because we're all, it's all the same taxpayers. And that's all the same taxpayers. Plus, I think that after a while, the planning department starts to develop certain expertise. And that's one of the reasons to do this, so that it becomes less expensive and a better fit. Because once they go through this once or twice, you got six areas. You know, you should be able to do all of them with that expertise, rather than have each area go off and start all over again. So what we kind of envision with it, there would be some expertise in the county. I mean, that's the whole idea here, trying to save some money.
This is really what we're all describing, right, is sort of how the Flood Action Task Force took its role in the past couple of years, whereby we did utilize, the communities who were applying for funding had to come forward with their own studies, with their own requests, and with some funding themselves before they would be evaluated on whether they could receive any county funding. We stumbled a little bit and continue to stumble about county benefit, which I think is something that still will need to get figured out if we are
probably
treating
this under this model, you wouldn't have that problem.
The only issue with this model, though, and we did find this even as a task force, is that there, within each watershed, there are communities who still do not want to be involved.
Could there be a hole in the
That's
true.
And that's certainly true. But it's just my own bias, you could call it. I see the role of the county, the larger government, as providing the leadership.
The leadership and expertise.
And we have a lot of the mapping and expertise.
We have put a mechanism in place, communities. All you have to do are these seven things, and then you're on board. And I don't see anything wrong with that kind of leadership. Communities just cannot sit back and expect the county to pour money down their throats.
I think we would like to open it up for some comments, because a lot of you have come today and you've been listening for a long time, and we don't want you to leave without feeling you haven't had a chance to be heard. So, sir, just identify yourself.
Mayor Billy from Amerenik.
Yes, sir.
Without getting into the nitty-gritty of negotiation and what the final format is, I think the key most pragmatic statement, as Judy just mentioned it, that is one of enforcement. The village of Amerenik, like the town of Amerenik, Larchmont, Ryan, Harrison, as was illustrated in 2007, which is 28 square miles of flooding.
Okay, thank you.
The problem is that while we can be notified of any project going on in Westchester County, the last thing people want to give up is home rule. I'm not saying give up home rule, but we certainly need a county level, not necessarily another level of government. The government's already here. We have to be able to be assured that whatever the rules and regulations are on a level basis throughout the entire county is enforced. We cannot do it, and it will be impossible to do it if you depend on home rule. You need this county level. I think it's probably one of the most influential and greatest pieces of legislation that I've heard of so far on the county level. Because the village of Amerenik or Larchmont or Rye or Harrison has a problem with a potential developer upstream, we can't do anything about it. We can go put the planning board there. You have no enforcement whatsoever. And I don't blame the developer. The developer wants the most. They're more interested in preventing flooding and damage. So I beseech you to go ahead on a county level. So when something happens, it can come to you, and it's on a level playing field, and everybody adheres to the same rules and regulations.
No, just to interrupt, that statement solidifies and brings together why it's important to get the communities to organize on a regional basis and watershed basis. The mayor said he gets all the water. Well, you know, if we had a basin-wide plan, maybe he shouldn't get all the water so soon and so fast. But that's the merit of planning together.
and you don't lose home rule. Any other comments? Valerie?
I was just going to say, Tom, you said the county could, it's a legal question, the county could form the districts, but the county wouldn't tax the people in the district. How can you form the district and then expect the district in its own way to tax the people in the district?
No, what we were talking about was that if we formed a separate district for Liswick, which is what you've been trying to do all along,
right,
the tax would be only on the people in that district.
Right.
So, and the Board of Legislators would be that, has to be the governing body of it because it's a county district.
And you'd collect the tax.
Well, yeah, it would be an interesting
benefit.
It would be a fee. And so I don't know, I'm not, I would ask the county attorney's office on, but I could see, for example, that we could impose the fee and then you collect it locally. I mean, you collect county taxes today anyway, so you collect your local fee and you just don't pass it on to us. It just gets allocated to you or however. I think those are legal technicalities.
Okay, right. Well, that was
What I'm just trying to do is reflect back to you that I, for one, as the original author of this, am trying to work with you to facilitate what you want to do. Because we've got to solve this problem. And we all know of those communities that don't want to get in there, and the whole object of having the county involved is that maybe there's some way to persuade them to join because of other things that we do with them.
And I think it's risky to assume that everybody's going to be going kumbaya if you've got 10 municipalities and one of them wants to be the odd man out, unless there's some overriding county impetus or legal authority to force them all into it. I see this as...
I assume we can force them into a district, right?
No, you can't. They got to join.
They
got to join. But that's the problem that they're having. And we've had this conversation. So by making it a county district, it would be similar to our solid waste district.
You mean a county-wide district?
No, it would be, it would be similar to the solid waste district where they have to buy in. Where they have to buy in. But we can give incentives so that it becomes something that they want to do rather than not do, because they're having a problem and they can't give the incentives to the other communities. We can give the incentives if we're working together with them. We can find ways to do this. I mean, in this case, this clearly has to be the county. Right.
What Tom says is right on. Under the model, any community that does not want to work together and participate, they got a real problem with their residents. You know, why can't they get along? Because the county's providing the leadership and the capital funding. And if we can't get it together for that, we can't get it together for anything.
Just note for the record, the arrival of Legislator Kaplowitz. We have Mr. Otis and then Legislator Kaplowitz.
Legislator Burton's here.
No, he was here before.
Before me, okay.
I wish you luck in terms of trying to sort out what is complex. These structure issues are complex. And in a sense, my recommendation would be to try and make it as simple as possible and find something that actually can function and work. But I think the most important thing I can pass along, having served many years on the Liswick Board and being on the County Flood Action Committee, is the importance of county being a financial partner to municipalities to make flood mitigation projects happen. And as you decide what you're going to do, please don't slow up the process of continuing to partner for these projects. Municipalities would have a very difficult time funding needed flood mitigation projects without some outside help. They're just too expensive. And so the fact that Westchester County stepped up to the plate and helped fund some projects already, and you're looking to fund projects in the future, that is noteworthy, because most other counties around the state don't do that, and municipalities couldn't do it without that help. So you need to keep the eye on the ball, which is we have projects out there that are percolating in the engineering departments of other municipalities. We want to be able to have those happen. They need your continued contribution. The other thing that's been alluded to by Al and by the mayor of Mamaroneck is where you have communities upstream that really don't have an interest in either thinking about flood mitigation projects at all or thinking about the impact of flooding when they do their planning decisions. They're really only at the table right now out of a sense of altruism, and it is rarer than it needs to be. This is a big problem if you're going to make a prerequisite to funding projects that a whole watershed, everyone in the watershed, agree to a plan, because those communities may not agree to a plan. And so I would not lose focus of the fact that where municipalities have done the engineering and come up with projects that, vetted by the county staff, work in terms of flood mitigation basis, find a way to make sure that those projects can go forward, even if we have recalcitrant up county, upstream neighbors, not up county, but upstream. So thank you very much.
Yeah, there are 2 models. When Tom and I, the whole I&I world was a problem in the same geography, much of the same geography, and the previous county executive, Vlad Sidakarski, was here, of course, and that was a way to utilize the county and its centralized plan, centralized purchasing power, centralized contracting, centralized bond rating. That was AAA and remains AAA and lowered the cost for everybody. But by letting one contract, I think the number came was about $5 million that we wound up saving, rather than having each of the local communities do it on their own. And so that was a model that was a very unbureaucratic model that worked well. Maybe we just put that on the table for particular projects. But to Tom's point, in the analogy of using the solid waste district or some of the other districts, we're trustees, fiduciaries for lots of districts, four water districts, a sewer district, the various sewer districts, and all the trash district. And so that's something we do perform, and the savings, again, are the centralized planning, centralized contracting, centralized AAA bond rating, which if any entity is not, saves you a couple of pennies, and that's money that can be passed on. It's buying 10 pounds of flour instead of 3 pounds of flour. You get a discount by doing that. The only caution I'd give you is that that model works so well that if you veer off from that a little bit, you do get into a little geographic trouble, which is if you try to go outside a particular watershed like the Crone watershed and ask for a town that's not in that watershed to participate in that watershed, you then begin to get the tribalism and the geographic fights break out. So if you keep it on a best basis, whoever wants to join, joins, look at the benefits of joining, you get a mug and a t-shirt and you get to come to the convention once a year and it's a good thing and we can save your tax dollars, then on that carrot basis, we've had a lot better luck than rather the stick basis, which then divides legislator to legislator, geography to geography, and all. So that's where we, Legislator Myers and the representative for the far north get to reach across the table and work with each other, right. Not try to strangle
each
other.
We like farms. We like non-flooding.
No, that I&I analogy is very good. But the county was under consent order, and by county law, the municipalities were forced to work together and to do certain things.
We can pass a law to make you work together if you want.
The Kumbaya law.
You must work together nicely.
Yes, sir.
One other issue. If you do end up with a structure, one of the things that we recommend is that you run this by the Army Corps of Engineers and your other federal entities. Because most of the big projects that we're looking at in Rye and Mamaroneck and other communities that are downstream require federal intervention and federal support. And you have to go through the federal feasibility process, and we've never tried to do that. It's a black box. So, it'd be a huge waste of our time and energy if we did all of this work and then found out we were going to basically exclude ourselves from the federal partnership.
We want them to buy into our whatever format we set up. We want them basically comfortable with But the Army Corps of Engineers was involved in the Mamaroneck project, the Rye project?
Currently right. Doing a Mamaroneck project, but in doing so has said that nothing can be done that really alters or disturbs the bodies of water that they
do will not disturb what they want to do.
Because they need to have these 3 years to study it.
But also, our projects that we can afford to do are so small that they really don't need to
what
the Army Corps
will be doing. Same with our projects. The ones that really make difference for us are multi-millions upstream.
You know, for the one project my community has done, we had to get the Army Corps approval of the plan. It took a while, and it was frustrating, but the Army Corps would have to review the plan.
Well, the question is, do they have to review the structure as well, or just the plans?
No, I would say it would be nice if they can get by just by reviewing the capital plan for the watershed. That would be a rightful role for them.
Yeah.
You know,
I would not want to submit to them the how we're structuring ourselves.
No, I don't think
I just want to make sure that was not the suggestion.
No, they probably wish they had a more efficient structure.
Right. How about the flood action plan? I think you probably want to show them that, right? The flood action plan.
Yeah, the eventual plans that we come out with, clearly you have to work with them. The engineers are going to, and the people doing the studies, we'll have to work with them. But that doesn't stop us from putting like together, you know, let's to move here.
Comments? Any other comments?
We note for the record the addition of Legislator Maizano. Welcome.
Thank you.
John?
Any other comments from the board? From the committee members.
We've made great strides. Thank you.
Peter?
Thank you.
Peter Eschweiler? Or?
Hi, Peter?
Do you have any comments?
Paul,
Peter.
All right. Well, what we'd like to do then, thanks everybody for coming, is at the next meeting, we would like Peter Eschweiler for this meeting, although we ran out of time. Unfortunately, we have an emergency cow, right, committee of the whole right after.
We're going to have a cow.
Otherwise,
committee of the whole.
We might have a cow at the
Peter put together comparing and contrasting the two pieces of legislation. We'll open next meeting with that, and then we'll try to begin. Find commonality.
I have a picture.
We have a motion to close environment. Second.
From the senior member to the junior
member. The senior member here.
Thanks, everybody.
My opponent, my primary election is
the.
Career politicians are failed.
Anyone want other in the primary?
I've got to.
Yeah.
It's,
I don't know.
Yeah, it'll be here. I just need to take a breath.
Nice to see you.
So I had a run, but another event. I gave out my list.